Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with the movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry. This show will bring you face to face with experts and speak to them about the past, present, and the future of the trade show and event industry. Through these conversations, we hope to bring you insights that will help you get the most out of your investments in your trade show participations. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to this third episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Today we have with us Adam Perry, the editor of eventsindustrynews.com, a leading online publication covering the latest news and trends in the event industry.
Trade shows and exhibitions are events where you have an audience keenly interested in a specific subject matter. But ultimately, those individuals are all there for very different reasons on the whole. In fact, I would probably say you could put people into, or attendees into, probably a dozen or more buckets of the reason they are there. Are they there because they are just starting out their career and they want education? Are they trying to learn about a specific topic? Are they there because their industry friends are going and they want the opportunity to meet up with them? Are their customers there? Are their prospects there? Are they looking for partnerships? Are they doing research? Are they doing competitive analysis? There's so many different reasons that they could be there. Have they just been told to go?
Adam Perry is the editor of eventsindustrynews.com, a leading online publication covering the latest news and trends in the event industry. With over a decade of experience and passion for all things events, Adam has established himself as a top thought leader in the field, providing insightful commentary and analysis on the latest developments in the industry. Whether it is breaking news, expert interviews, or in-depth features, Adam is committed to bringing his readers the most up-to-date and relevant information on the world of events. When he's not busy working, Adam enjoys traveling and attending industry conferences to stay on top of the latest trends and innovations in the field. Now, on to this insightful episode with Adam Perry. Adam, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I'm really glad that I could catch you when you are back in UK. You have been traveling, so thanks a lot for joining me this morning.
No, it's an honor. I love to chat to people such as yourself about what we do, the events industry at large. So hopefully, today's conversation goes well and your listeners find it interesting as well. But yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity.
I'm certain that it will be, especially because the kind of breadth of work that you do. See, as I said, I'm a past life journalist. So when you run a journalistic site like the one you do, it's a wonderful place to be because you really get to see a very wide range of things. With that in mind, where do you think really the event industry is headed?
I honestly think coming out of the pandemic, the events industry is really poised for a huge amount of growth and expansion. If you look to some of the industry reports that are coming out from associations like the AEO, UFI, MPI, and others, there are so many to name. I can't get them all in.
Sure.
It's really showing an appetite for businesses on the whole to use events as an opportunity and a way to engage with customers, prospects, community, and their own teams, internal teams, having events as an activity of bringing those people together. And I think, us as humans as well, we have this huge appetite for experiences and to connect with like-minded people. Travel is one way that we do that, but events are very, very closely aligned with that, with more an advantage in terms of outcome. People can invest in events as a business activity to see an outcome, to see a positive outcome. And I think, with the technology and other aspects of event design and things that we're seeing coming through into the industry, organizers like myself and others really now have the tools to be able to create these fantastic experiences that are personalized, that can deliver on what each individual person is there to achieve as part of that event or what that organization is there to achieve. And I also think there are some other things at play, such as, we've just gone to we are transitioning to a cookieless world with online advertising and other forms of outreach being kind of changed. So businesses are now looking at events as a way to connect really with in person. And I think, there's nothing more authentic in this social media bias world that we are now. When you meet in person, it's so authentic, and people are craving authenticity, I think, at the moment. Now, we've been through 2 years or more of a pandemic where we were socially kind of disconnected from people, and the only thing we had was social media or kind of appearing to the outside world. So I think we are poised for a huge growth period over the next sort of maybe 5 to 10 years.
Wonderful. We'll come back and touch upon two of the key components of the trade show business. Mm-hmm. So one is that, when I'm looking at it from the B2B sales angle, primarily, I see that if you look at what's going on in the B2B sales sort of landscape, if you look at the technology, if you look at the discourse is about identifying intent. So that's a big thing, right? So there are a lot of companies which have become unicorns because they say that we have the intent data, mm-hmm. and which we can supply to you. The point is that trade shows always had intent inbuilt into the business. If I'm not interested in EdTech, I am not going to go to EdTech exhibition, right? If I'm not interested in event tech, I'm not going to go there. So that's intent. And it's a much higher value intent because I'm committing my time and physically I'm being there. It's much different than my searching event tech or EdTech or whatever we are saying. So it was always a very, very strong, according to me, very, very strong component of the trade show business, right? Yeah. However, the ROI is always a question. What did we get out of this? Okay, of course, there are two buckets. Big brands come to further reinforce their brands, as you know. If a Microsoft is coming to CES, it's not trying to sell Surface tabs or it's not trying to do something like that. I'm just using these names loosely, obviously. But the point I'm making is a big chunk of trade show is about identifying potential partners, buyers, and actually taking them to conclusion, and our inability as an industry, perhaps, to answer the ROI question is sort of clouding the huge value of intent that we bring to the table. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting question and topic of discussion, and I'm sure there's many differences of opinions, but I think let's start to dissect what a trade show is. As you've mentioned, trade shows and exhibitions are events where you have an audience keenly interested in a specific subject matter. But ultimately, those individuals are all there for very different reasons on the whole. In fact, I would probably say you could put people into or attendees into probably a dozen or more buckets of the reason they are there. Are they there because they are just starting out their career and they want education? Are they trying to learn about a specific topic? Are they there because their industry friends are going and they want the opportunity to meet up with them? Are their customers there? Are their prospects there? Are they looking for partnerships? Are they doing research? Are they doing competitive analysis? There's so many different reasons that they could be there. Have they just been told to go by somebody else in the organization? And I think when it comes to the exhibiting companies, there's a wealth of experience and knowledge and information and strategy and approach that often goes into quantifying what real ROI is for that business. I think, there's this old adage of, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. And ultimately, this is where us as organizers, we have done our job to an extent at that point where we have driven that audience to register. We have shown them the value of attending. They have shown up and turned up. But we can't go, it's difficult to go many steps further than that to get those people to engage with the exhibitor. That then comes predominantly down to the exhibitor in the way that they have positioned themselves, the messaging, the strategy that they've put in place. Have they done a nurturing program in the lead up to the show to reach out to people that they know are going to be there? Who are they really trying to talk to? And did they actually understand what they need to achieve from the event in order to have a positive ROI?
Right.
Because so many companies, in my experience, come into it with very little, sometimes, trade show experience. It might be their first time at a trade show. And that's partly on us as an organizer to try and help them be prepared. You know, that is part of the service. But do they understand what they actually are trying to achieve out of it? How many leads do they want? Often ROI is quantified by two aspects, and that is number of leads generated at the show, which often is not necessarily the right ROI metric because, you know, you speak to anybody, would you rather have 4 conversations worth $1 million or 100 conversations worth $10? And it's you know, that's where the lead generation number kind of is a overinflated representation of what true ROI is. And where are they on their journey? You know, if they've just launched into an industry, can they really expect to see a positive confirmed booking or business ROI out of an event and a trade show within the space of 12 months? You know, they are still themselves starting out and on their journey. But the one thing that I know that trade shows are extremely good at is, back to your original point, is bringing an industry together at a moment in time in an extremely efficient way with a huge amount of opportunity to do business and create connection and build networks and build trust that really doesn't exist anywhere else in any other format. You know, we often, people talk about building trust and authenticity and things like that online. Well, in a trade show environment, that is exemplified by 1,000 times because everybody is there with intent. They have made the effort to be there, whether that be an exhibitor or an attendee. So it's the million-dollar question. I think as a trade show industry, you know, it's partly our part to try and nurture those companies, try and help them with strategy, try and help them with the right approach. And there are other companies out there as well, if you don't mind me mentioning some of them, like, there's a great company called Expo Stars who actually do this as a service, both with the organizer and the exhibiting company, to get them really, really prepared to get a positive ROI out of the show. And then, you know, there's technology as well. There's lots of technology now in play that help identify the right person, help them qualify them, help them follow up quickly after a show, help them nurture them post-show in terms of marketing, and also help them connect at the show. You know, I'm a big fan now of hosted buyer programs if they're done in the right way, because ultimately if a company really, really, really needs to see a positive ROI, then what better way to have pre-scheduled meetings with the right people with the interest around what you do than just hoping for that serendipitous opportunity for people to kind of walk past and respond to your branding and your call to action that you've got on and look to engage with you. So that's a very, very long-winded answer to your question, Sopanjan, but hopefully that's kind of what you were looking for there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think there's a lot that you covered. And before I move on to, I want to talk to you about your thoughts about virtual exhibitions and where they fit in or they don't fit in and so on. I mean, we'll come back there. But sure. Before that, let's talk a bit about, I didn't totally catch the name of the company, but you said Expo Star. Was that what you said?
Expo Stars, yeah. Expo Stars, they essentially help organizers provide information, documentation and videos and things like that to help their exhibitors get prepared. But they also do this with companies themselves who, maybe it's their first time exhibiting, maybe they are actually a large company, but they just have new staff. So they get them prepared in the way that they approach an event in the lead up to the show, how they activate on the show, how they tweak their approach as the show's happening to get a better result from it, and how they also follow up as well. I think the allure of trade shows and exhibitions for companies is actually to go, right, well, we'll book that trade show 6 months, 8 months, 2 months out, whatever that might be. There's going to be all of these thousands of people there. All we've actually got to do is decide what we're going to do in terms of our stand design or branding,
yeah,
and then we'll meet lots of people while we're there.
Yeah.
And that's the actual easy bit. That's the easy bit of the trade show activation. It's everything around it, the approach, the strategy, the conversations, the lead qualification and the follow-up that actually is the secret sauce to making trade shows work very, very well.
Business. Right. So you mentioned as a follow-up that there is a lot of technology in place already, because then you obviously have a very, very good idea about what is out there. So you spoke about nurturing, and mm-hmm. let's talk a bit about that. So one of the things that I heard in my conversations with various people is that exhibition organizers protect their attendee list like that's the crown jewel, right? They don't want to give it out. And many I have heard, and I can hazard a guess that it may be the larger number of exhibition organizers who do not part with attendee lists. Now, in a scenario like that, and especially when you're going to a location and participating, for instance, you may be anywhere, but you're going to Las Vegas or you're coming to London and you are participating in a trade show. To your mind, how does the nurturing work, and how can we make it effective with the background that you may or may not have access to the data of who is actually coming?
Sure. I guess it's there's a couple of approaches. And I think to qualify and quantify why there is protection around that attendee data, especially here in the UK, is a couple of fold. You know, ultimately, as trade show organizers, as media owners, we are data businesses. The lifeblood of our business is creating an opportunity for a brand or a business to reach that data. And those individuals do expect some level of protection, because nobody wants to be spammed consistently, with outreach and stuff like that. So there's that element. There's also the GDPR element,
of course,
which essentially does somewhat tie our hands here in the UK, especially because any personal identifiable information, such as telephone numbers and email addresses, explicitly can't be shared unless they've agreed for it to be shared.
Yeah.
Now, one of the approaches that I have seen, and we adopt this approach and I have seen others approach, is that lots of events now use event platforms and event apps to contain information on the event, sometimes the actual badge for the event, and other incentives to people to adopt those. And within that will be a list of the attendees attending the show. Now, it's not in the perfect format for somebody to export into an Excel spreadsheet and then kind of work on that. But, you know, there are tools out there, I'm not going to lie, that can scrape that kind of information and put it in that format for you.
Right.
And I think what smart businesses are doing is they are accessing that information. They are taking the names of those attendees, the job titles, and the companies that work for. They're then putting them into their own marketing systems. Maybe they're using a solution like Drippify to be able to connect up with them on LinkedIn and send them personalized messages and things like that. And then approaching it in a way that they are using the data that they can access through those event apps and event networking tools and LinkedIn and others. And maybe even Apollo and Zoom Info and these other platforms as well. And The business that most big companies are in at the moment is data enrichment.
Right.
So they're taking data from there, enriching it as much as they can, and then kind of doing an outreach in the lead up to the show, whether that be by LinkedIn, email, or even picking up the phone to people.
Fair point. And how many, I have, of course, I'm familiar with the apps and I'm familiar with this process, and which I think is pretty good, because most of the time, unless the other person connects, you cannot download their data. And if they do connect, then you have a legitimate reason for being able to see their, you know, their email or whatever they've shared in the platform. And by the way, I completely support GDPR. I completely support non-invasive engagement. Yeah. Because it's really completely unfair to share anybody's data with a third party without consent and when they're not interested. So I'm completely with you on that. I'm personally not a big fan of cold campaigns. I think it has run its course and I think eventually it has to die, but that's a different discussion.
And I think that's one of the great things about the trade shows, right? If you know that somebody that you want to speak to is attending that event, then there is intent, there is interest there.
Yeah.
Is it in your specific field of supply? Maybe not. Maybe yes. That's for you to understand.
Yeah.
But at least it's legitimate in the sense of we are both going to be at the same place at the same time. It'd be great to just get to know you. That to me is warm. That's warm intent.
Yes, absolutely.
And actually, that's one of the great things about trade shows is it can offer people a very, very targeted opportunity to do that approach.
I completely agree. The other part was you were talking about follow-up. Again, sticking to the technology bit. What kind of... I mean, that's a big problem. And so typically, just to set up the context, typically what I hear is that if I'm an exhibitor and I'm participating in a trade show, I talk to people all day. If I'm really big and smart, I will possibly send them out a mail end of the day saying, hey, thanks for coming by. That typically happens not the same day, but actually after the event is over and when I hand over the contact database to the marketing department, maybe the following Monday or whatever, and that goes out. And then the sales folks who have actually collected and met these people, they get back to their desk in a couple of days from then. And then they start writing the more detailed, a more detailed sort of contextual mail. Hey, you came. This is what we discussed. These are the things I promised that I'll send you. This is the stuff. This is the document. This is the PDF. This is whatever. So this is a sort of a 7-day exercise. If it is a 3-day event, weekend closes Monday. Thank you for coming by. Very generic mail to everybody. And then the problem with this whole approach is if I'm a attendee and I've visited 40 booths, in a 200 booth exhibition, that's exactly what's happening from everybody's end. And suddenly after 7 days, I have this 40 emails with lots of material. And I would have also forgotten many of them, exactly who I spoke to and what I discussed and so on. So that's the scenario. Would you agree with that?
It's a very typical scenario. There are more sophisticated ways of approaching that essentially comes down to, you know, both experience and the size of a team and things like that. But I think there's also a number of ways and examples that I can share to kind of, or ideas I can share to make it really effective. First of all, one of the things that we all know an effective follow-up is information and qualification. The more that we know about somebody, their challenges, what they were there at the event for, why they started speaking to you, the easier that follow-up is and the more personalized and personal that follow-up is. Often what happens at shows is that very little information is actually collected or it's rushed. A badge scan is just not enough. A badge scan is not enough.
Yeah.
There needs to be so much more about that qualification and the information recorded to make that follow-up effective. Now, interestingly, what most people don't realize is there is a scientific research piece that's been done, which is if you search the forgetting curve essentially means that me and you can have a conversation right now as we are doing, and within about 5 days, if I've not proactively taken steps to collect that information, I will only retain 20% of this conversation. Now, you factor in the addition of international travel, maybe jet lag, long days, long nights, if you're going out socializing and networking, and all of a sudden that 20% is probably 5% because of all of these other factors. And you're trying to still keep on top of your day-to-day job and business as normal. Now, I think this is actually where we will see technology and AI come into place to proactively support teams at events, capture that information and conversation. I was recently having a conversation with an organization called Congo, and they are essentially launching a hardware tool, basically a cylindrical badge that can attach to your lanyard or your top that is powered by AI, all offline, so you don't need to be connected to the Wi-Fi. By the way, this is not a sales pitch for them. I just think they're a fantastic company. And essentially what they're bringing into play is the technology that we've already started to become accustomed to, like Fathom and other call recording technologies, to help us retain that information. And I think that's going to be extremely effective, not only so that the salespeople can remember what they spoke to them about, but the marketing team can get actual detailed contextual information about the challenges and needs of that individual. That can also then be put into Salesforce and other marketing systems to enrich that personal piece of information. So that's the first part. I think secondly, just coming back to this, the lead scan, you just can't just scan a badge and then expect that person to buy from you. You need a lead qualification process. Are they in research mode? Are they in buy mode? Were they recommended to you by somebody? Who were they recommended by? And things like that. So there's so much that needs to go around that qualification process to be able to make an effective follow-up. And then I also think that, let's be honest, there's so many companies out there that go to a trade show and they don't even follow up. Yeah. They just add them to a mailing database and expect people to buy. But I also think that we often too quickly rush to get them to buy. It's the first time we've met them. What value are we offering? Can we offer value? Were they there because they were looking for, I'm just going to pick a random subject, they've got a database that they want to visualize. Have we gone straight to book a demo, buy my tech? Or have we gone to, you had a challenge with this, here's a really interesting resource, step one. How did you find that resource? Here's another piece of information or another tool that you might be able to use, free of charge. Nurture, 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 offer value, value, value. Maybe 5 or 6 steps down the line, maybe pick the call, phone up then. How are you finding it? You still got the same challenges. Can we now book a demo?
Yeah.
And that's the way that normal relationships work, right?
Absolutely.
You don't meet somebody and say, can you buy from me now?
Yeah.
You build a relationship, you nurture that, and then comes the time when it's right to say, is this now the right time for you to buy from us? Is it now the right time to investigate this?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's just often why people look at trade shows and go, oh, well, I didn't get any ROI out of that. Well, you probably approached it the wrong way. You probably didn't nurture it. You probably didn't offer any value. And was that person even looking to immediately buy, or is it in 12 to 18 months? Like, where are they on their buying cycle and things like that? So yeah, I think that's some of my thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I think this is great. I mean, I think the interesting part is that as you're talking, because last few years, I have been talking to a lot of people about B2B sales. So at a sort of higher plane than just specific to trade shows. And you will not believe the exact same issues.
Yeah.
There is this exact same problems. The ROI is not only about trade show. The ROI is about the marketing campaign. ROI is about the Google campaign. So everywhere is the same issue. And everywhere the follow-up is buy from me now or don't follow up at all.
Yeah.
It's like weird. I mean, how that happens, I honestly can't fathom.
the rule of thumb is I think people need north of 8 to 10 outreaches of value before you've actually got them to the point where they might even just respond to you.
Yeah.
Right? Like we've got to remember that even everybody is extremely busy and purchasing decisions are ones that are taking a long time under consideration, you know, especially in software and things like that, where we're talking maybe, you know, 5 to 10 year plus contracts at tens of thousands of dollars, if not north of that. And, you know, these are not small decisions. And often businesses are fast paced and moving quickly. And it becomes a priority and then it drops off and then it becomes a priority again and it drops off. And I think, you know, interestingly, I have a customer who just recently started exhibiting with Eventech Live. Mm. They've now done 2 shows with us. And Margaret, the founder of that company, said, you know what, you're one of the most nicely persistent companies in your approach. It's taken you 10 years to convert us, but now we're fully invested. And that's just, you know, it's that nurturing of like, they're not necessarily ready to buy from us now, but maybe at some point they will be.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where that horizon of, did I get ROI from that event is not immediately. It's not even 6 months, 12 months. It could be years down the line. And I think that's the other thing is companies are not necessarily at a point themselves where they are sophisticatedly tracking where that initial inquiry came from and where that piece of business came from. And actually, industry events are one of those few opportunities where you could see somebody at the industry show at the beginning of the year, and then 6 months later at the one in the mid-year, and then 6 months later at one at the end of the year. Now, what point of those three industry events did they become the buyer for you? Was it at the first one? Was it at the second one where you had that more of that conversation? Or was it the third one where they said, let's book that demo? Like, how do you allocate where that business ultimately came from, even though those three industry events are maybe about the same thing? It's just because you've had an opportunity to meet with them three times through the year, and then they're ready to have a conversation with you or book a demo or whatever it is. So that's the other part is it's, and I haven't got an answer for it because it's different for each company, is it's the tracking of where that business comes from and the life cycle of it is really important as well.
Yeah. So it brings to light two things, right, Adam? One is that you will not know unless you have actually genuinely built trust. And we talk about that all the time and we abuse this all the time as sellers. We say trust is the first thing, but then I send you a mail with a tracking pixel in it without telling you that I'm tracking it. And I expect that you are so stupid that you will not know that I'm doing it. When I pick up the phone and say, can I help you with that thing that you are looking at? And anyway, so that's one challenge that I see that we face. And one of the things that I think is missing, or one of the things that is pushing this, is most sales organizations are quarter driven, and they're not like 3 years out driven. And one of the stats which you possibly obviously know is that the average tenure of a VP of sales is 18 months. So the topmost guy in the organization gets switched every 18 months. There is no way he's going to plan for 5 years, right? Yeah. That's one observation. The other point I want to bring out and would love to know what you think. You know, this whole discussion about sales is very sales out, right? We are not investing time in actually giving the buyer a voice, and actually not even interested in the voice. We are interested in our quarterly quota. And so I don't have the luxury of really hearing you out. I want to know how quickly I can figure out whether you're going to buy from me this quarter or not.
And I think it's there's two really interesting points that you make there. Churning of staff is a real problem because and let's be honest, people want to go on to new opportunities and they want to develop their career and stuff like that. So that is absolutely fine. But often what happens in those scenarios is that the old contact, the person that's got the relationship with the customer or the prospect, is leaving, and that customer and prospect doesn't find out until they've left. There's no transition period. There's no nurturing of the passing of the guard, and this is the new person you're going to be. You're in good hands, and So I think that's one challenge that happens there. But often, it's also like you said, that people unfortunately are not taking a real interest in that business, in that person. They're not building a personal relationship with them. You know, simple things of just taking an interest in their family lives, or how are they doing at their favorite sport, and all these things. And I know most businesses today, high focus sales business, would be like, oh, well, that's just all fluff, and you know, it's not really efficient, and you're wasting lots of time and stuff. And I would say maybe so if you're in a high churn sales business. But if you're in a business that's looking to maintain and retain a customer base for 10 plus years, that is the most important thing.
I agree. I totally agree. Because unless you, so where I was going with that thought, and as you rightly pointed out, if I'm not doing this discussion, you are unlikely to tell me if I ask, When do you think this is going to become a real transactional issue for you? You will tell me, hey, you know, Shwarchwanyan, just so that you know, I'm not buying right now. There is a discussion happening internally, and this may be budgeted next financial year. So you have to be patient. You will tell me this if I have done that rest of it properly. You will not tell me this if you know that the moment I say this, this guy is going to drop off and his, all his interest is, you know, sort of really fake.
Yeah.
You know, the genuine interest. I mean, that's the key. And that's the key about trust. That's the key about relationship. All these are about genuine interest. It cannot be based on the interest is there as long as you are my customer. The interest goes away when it is not. I mean, I have had situations where someone did not buy from me, but has sent me 3 customers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he said that, look, this guy, if it is not something to your interest that he can provide, he will say, look, don't buy it from me because there is someone else in my competition who will serve this better than what you are actually trying to get out of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
The ecosystem I see really evolving well is events as the moment in time, media or mediums as the connection points and the touch points throughout the rest of the year, whether that's through podcasts like this, through newsletters, through news, through webinars, and all of these different ways to connect up with people around an idea. And then actually, platforms like Salesforce, HubSpot, or Marketo are really identifying the events and media industry as a way that they can feed back into their systems to enrich and enhance and then help that follow-up process.
You are listening to a Bizcast audio original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode.
Where do you see technologies are evolving, or what kind of technology do you see in helping people do the follow-up bit?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. I don't think this technology exists at the moment, but I see it being a symbiosis between the events, the media, or the medium in which that lead was generated through, and a solution like HubSpot, Marketo, Pipedrive, maybe it's the Salesforce CRM, whoever. You know, one of the things that I think we're all really excited about is the use of AI within any of these tools or powering these tools are going to help us make it much more, it's going to help us much more identify where to focus our time and where the lowest hanging fruit is. Because we can often take something post-event in a totally different direction where we think, oh, well, the person from Google spoke to us at this trade show, so we're going to go after them because Google have got loads of money. And actually, it's the mom and pop business independently owned that can make that decision tomorrow and invest $1 million. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's quite easy to make those decisions. Mm. But I think actually post-event follow-up, it's like, well, how is my lead interacting? Is my lead going back to the trade show website and reinvestigating my profile? Have they logged back into the platform? Have they looked at one of the sessions I delivered? You know, it's about touch points. And I think that's the ecosystem I see really evolving well is events as the moment in time, media or mediums as the connection points and the touch points throughout the rest of the year, whether that's through podcasts like this, through newsletters, through news, through webinars, and all of these different ways to connect up with people around an idea. And then actually, platforms like Salesforce, HubSpot, or Marketo are really identifying the events and media industry as a way that they can feed back into their systems to enrich and enhance and then help that follow-up process. And I think that's one of the things that I really see. I'm also a fan of just, you know, in the noise of LinkedIn and email and getting spam caught and things like that, I think one of the most effectively things you can do is generate a way to connect with your leads and your prospects and your customers through platforms like WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. You know, that could just be having a personal relationship with them and being able to send them a message appropriately at the right time in the right way, maybe with some value and things like that. Mm-hmm. I have actually literally done business deals over WhatsApp. Like, I think it's that effective. Or build small communities where you can keep those customers and prospects connected to each other through those platforms and provide value that way. And then you've got a way to reach out to them and nurture them on those platforms. I think effective follow-up is not just what we say, how we say it, and when we say it. It's how we get the message through to them. And I think we all know at the moment that email deliverability is extremely challenging. You know, constantly moving with security systems and Google changing their approach and all of these kind of things, and then just the volume of spam and things people get. I think follow-up actually needs to be a little bit smarter after the event. And I think platforms like WhatsApp or SMS messaging, as long as they're not abused, as long as they're used in the right way, can be extremely effective in follow-up.
Absolutely. I want to talk about virtual events and where they fit in the post-COVID era. But before that, any other area where you see some interesting technology evolving and making a difference to both the organizers as well as the exhibitors?
Yeah, sure. I think technologies that streamline the operational processes and things like that, right? So often when an exhibitor comes to exhibit at a trade show, there's an exchange of information that's needed. There's lots of questions from those exhibitors, times of opening, logistics, where do I send my packages to? Is there a dinner? All these kinds of things. And there are some great technologies out there now. There's one in particular called FAIR, F-F-A-I-R, that is that bridge now between the organizer and the exhibitors to make all of that information and exchange of information and everything really, really effective and seamless. And that we use them particular, and I'm hearing from other customers of theirs personally that they're having great experiences from us. Gone are the days of Excel spreadsheets and everything done over email. Now these platforms that become these central hubs and portals of communication, documentation, information stuff. I think project management tools are making a big step forward. But what I'm actually really interested in is seeing some of these new technologies that have just come out based on AI develop. There's one in particular called Eva, the events voice assistant. And their aim is for their voice-enabled app, their technology, just like Siri or Hey Google, etc., to be...
The mic's off.
Which I just realized I said Hey Google and then my Google went off. For this voice assistant to be integrated, to connected to all of your other systems, so your sales systems, your operation systems, your marketing systems, your event app, your information, your scheduling, your sessions, your speakers, and for the event team and attendees to request information from it and to also send information to it. So it could be an example of that could be that you are the event director and you need to update some information. You also need to update your team. So you say, hey, Eva, please update this information across the system and also send a text message to everybody on the operations team that this has been changed. And that immediacy of doing it really enhances the efficiency of the event process, especially while the event's happening, but also eliminates a lot of the outdated information or error making that can go along when you're on site. And then from an attendee experience perspective, you know, being able to attend event and get all of, access to all of the information that you need contextually, being able to translate and have conversations with other people in different languages and things like that. You see, I'm seeing a lot of events now approach having their content translated live into multiple languages to allow it to be the most comfortable experience for people that maybe English isn't their first language or Spanish isn't their first language, for example. So yeah, there's lots of different things all coming together nicely. I think the one challenge for the events and exhibitions industry is the mindset is not still, because of the way that events work on a cyclical basis, the mindset is not to invest in these technologies and budget for these technologies on the whole. A lot of it is done event by event, because some events are obviously a bigger scale than others and things like that. So the approach is for event technology is done very, very differently to like the approach of the sales system, the sales CRM, the marketing systems, the database systems and things like that. And I actually think that's one of the things that makes it really challenging, because there's no really long-term thought out approach to how technology is being delivered on events and how it's being used. Which is obviously a frustration for the event technology companies, because that also means that they can't forecast 5-10 years down the line and stuff like that, which makes investment harder, development harder and things like that. But I'm hoping that's changing. I'm seeing some companies really what I would say is go all in. You know, Easy Fares is an example of that. They've just decided to use one particular platform across every single event that they are going to be doing for a number of years, and that's the approach that they're taking. And I think that will create ultimately for them a better experience, both for them as an organizer and for the attendees. But that takes a lot of confidence to be able to go, we're committed to this one platform, for example. So yeah, there's lots and lots of great opportunity. The reports that are coming out on the investment opportunities in event technology that I'm seeing are very, very positive. And I think with the advancements in AI, the technology that we already have will only get better as well.
During COVID, when we were in this middle of this scenario where we thought we do not know when the world is going to get together again, we saw this huge rise of virtual platforms. And there were like literally dozens of them which came out at that point. Some of them survive, some of them are becoming hybrid and so on and so forth. Where do you think virtual events actually fit in to the trade show and events space in that landscape? I mean, do they fit in anywhere or they don't, or what's your take?
I think virtual events is something as a naming type that we might have to kind of leave in the past. I think for now it's tarred with some bad feelings and bad memories. And I also don't necessarily think it's really true of the types of experiences and the ways that we can connect with attendees and create these experiences online. You know, we have webinars have certainly not gone away. People are still connecting online through LinkedIn Live and these communities and things like that. So I think the real tragedy about the pandemic, although it created this opportunity and this development and this forward way of moving with events, it did help a lot of businesses stay afloat and stay alive. But the analogy that I would give is it was like taking all of these people that had been used to being speed walkers. That's the business that they were in. They walked fast. And then overnight asking them to run a 100K marathon. It was a totally different way of delivering event experiences. It was at an immense pace. People hadn't really worked out how to generate revenue from them and business from them and provide the value of that business from them. And I think it didn't, for the trade show market, it didn't necessarily translate very well from, I'm going to sell you a space on my show floor at 100 square meters, which is this much money because you have taken 100 square meters, into I'm going to put you in front of an audience online, which seems very easy and very cheap to do. And therefore, why would I pay the same amount of money that I'd paid over here? So to your original question, does it translate into the trade show business? Is somebody going to transition their physical trade show to a purely digital trade show? No, I don't think that the finances make sense. The revenue and the profit margins make sense. Do I think the trade show market can use digital events the same way media are using digital events to provide additional revenue and sponsorship and income and touch points and data and analytics and drive attendance and stuff like that? Absolutely. But where we've been up to now is a lot of those businesses have been building back to the same levels of revenue and turnover and business that they were pre-pandemic. I'm involved in a couple of working groups with the Association of Event Organizers, and only now are those organizations really having conversations around where are the opportunities when it comes to digital engagements and our webinars and these events and stuff like that part of them. But that's not to say that I don't think that there are times in the future where we might have individuals that come in and try and relaunch a digital trade show, an online event for a particular market, and go up with one of the big events. You know, I'm not saying this is particularly about them, but I'll use examples of, you know, you've got some long, big established events like Money 2020 and Automechanica and all of these things that are out there. And is there a business that can come in and evolve on that and do it in a different way? Maybe it's on a lead generation value exchange. So the more leads that a business receives from an event, the more income the organizer gets. Is it a share of revenue, a share of ROI, a share of outcome? So it's the same way like affiliates and kind of online influencers and things do things. And I think that's what could potentially be disruptive, because while physical events are amazing, and to me, they are irreplaceable for a lot of the factors that you can't do online, that human connection, that one-to-one connection and things like that. We are very time poor as people. We have the challenges of travel and logistics and family life and all of this other stuff. And I think, you know, if we're there to gain knowledge and information and exchange that, then would I go to the digital one? Probably yes. It would be the question over the physical one, which is where I would have to make a decision. Am I going or am I not, from a budgetary perspective, from a time perspective and stuff like that? So I think, you know, we've seen this over the decades, time and time again, print publications being disrupted by digital publications, traditional broadcasting media being disrupted by streaming platforms, YouTube becoming the biggest media organization on the planet, driving the most amount of revenue through to creators and things like that, outside of anything. So I will not sit here and say that I do not think in the future there will be very, very successful online virtual events and trade shows. I think they're poised to be. I just don't think the existing way of driving revenue and profit that exists at the moment is the way that we'll see those businesses kind of evolve.
Yeah. So the business model itself has to evolve, like what it did for things like Netflix or YouTube and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
absolutely. Do you see there is a space in the short run? And this I'm sort of connecting back to our ability to do follow-up and remembering. And you spoke about the memory loop. Is that what you use?
Oh, the forgetting curve.
The forgetting curve. Okay. Yeah. So, by the way, in training, there is this thing called requirement for space repetition, right? So they're sort of connected. And when you were talking about that, I was remembering about space repetition, that yes, that repetition is required. Yeah. So coming back to that, the forgetting loop, forgetting curve.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Do you see that there could be a value where post event, suppose for instance, we have, events tech live, you are having this event and there are maybe 100 companies exhibiting and so on. And do you see that there is a value that post event have a digital arena available for maybe 3 months after the event so that people who attended could potentially A, go back and check out some of the stalls they did not make to, and B, also sort of have this ability to get reminded, okay, I went to this stall, what exactly did they say? It was very similar to that stall. What was the thing that I... Do you see any value in that at all?
I do to a certain degree, and we've had these things in various different iterations. So we have a company called Zuant who come in and use a technology called Matterport to capture the physical event in 360 degrees. So okay. It's literally as people would remember it. Mm-hmm. And then using things like hot points and information, you can annotate that stand with contextual information and ways for those people to reach out and contact them.
Right.
It's actually, as an organizer, it's fantastic for you to be able to go back into it and kind of go, oh yeah, that fire extinguisher was over there or whatever it was. So it's actually a great operational tool. And then we've also worked with other organizations such as VEX, which will actually go in and recreate the event more from a graphical perspective. So more what you would expect of an event from like a gaming perspective in that sense. And with that comes some additional ability and things like that that you can do with that. The honest answer to that is, though, you see a peak of interest and then it kind of dives off quite quickly. Until actually you come around to maybe the next cycle of the event and maybe you're using it as a way to showcase to prospective exhibitors how the event might look, how people are positioning themselves and things like that. And that can help from a sales cycle perspective on that side of things.
Okay.
I think what I see short term as a bigger opportunity is actually just to do what we do, but in reverse. So for our business, Event Industry News, as the media came first and the events came after that. I think for event organizers that are pure play event organizers, media is the way that they should be expanding their opportunities, because every exhibitor could have a campaign of advertisements, editorial opportunities to engage, things that are going to bring the audience back consistently and see their brand and further create opportunities for them, for those individuals to connect with those brands and do business together. And all of the technology out there to quantify that and create those stats for the exhibitor or the sponsor and have conversations about the value of ROI and things like that. Interestingly, there used to be an event in the UK called Square Meal that had an event called Venues and Events, Square Meal Venues and Events. And their strategy I see being flipped. So their strategy was you could not exhibit at their event unless you were a paid advertiser in their publication. And I see an opportunity for people to go, well, you are an exhibitor at our event, so therefore you can advertise and market yourselves through our publication.
Right. Makes sense.
So, yeah, and I think that's they are different disciplines. They do require slightly different skill sets and things like that.
Yeah.
But I don't see why a business couldn't package up, right, to be involved in our event. This is, you have this as an event and you have this as a long tail medium after the show, because this is where all that audience comes back to for news and information. And this is your package. It's just whether people can make that make sense from a budgetary perspective when they're putting it forward to these companies.
Right. When you actually started the news portal, what were your thoughts and where has it come till now and where do you see this headed?
Yeah, sure. So interesting, let me tell you a short story about how Event Industry News was launched. Me and my co-founder, my business partner, who was actually my boss at the time, my direct line manager, we both worked on a print publication. And the business that we worked for had in excess of 20 plus B2B monthly or bi-monthly periodicals that went out to industry. Each year we had to come up with a proposition to improve the publication. You know, how do we increase readership? How do we increase revenue? Where's the growth metrics? And the thing that struck me walking into that business at a young age was that each of these B2B publications all had a website, but all that website was a glorified contact us here, or subscribe to potentially get a publication here. And for anybody out there that doesn't know how B2B publications work, you generally have a strict cap on circulation, the total number of magazines that you can mail out. You know, it's expensive to print and mail these publications, so you need to keep that circulation tight. And often, sometimes, when, you know, the revenue takes a dip, or it's hard to maintain that publication because the revenue is not there. What also struck us, or me particularly, was that editorial control was very strange to me, in the fact that we had these companies that were investing tens of thousands of pounds a year to have a presence within the publication and advertise their business, but we would not let them talk about it editorially. We would not work with them and find ways for them to have conversations within that from a thought leadership perspective. It was like, no, you advertise on nothing. The editorial's got to be from other sources, from other things. And I get that. There's an element of you don't want to be biased and you want to maintain quality. But I turned around to Paul, my business partner, and I said, I think I've got an idea where we could basically present to the board that we would take some of this news that we don't, it comes in too late, so we've got nowhere to put it, or it's just after the magazine's been published, so it goes to die because it's old news. And we can also you can also use these websites to put some information on about the advertisers and things like that, and provide a way for them to get their story out there. You know, it was at the dawn of Twitter, and I was like, we can publish it to Twitter and Facebook and find new audiences and drive a bigger audience. So we go from 10,000 to maybe 20,000 total circulation. And then my final pitch to it was, and you know what? Maybe somebody will pay us a few thousand pounds a year to advertise on the website, and maybe we can do like an extra 10 grand for the publication. And if that works for us and the other 20 plus can replicate it, that's a nice chunk of additional revenue for the business without actually any additional outlay, really. And the business that we worked for at the time turned around and went, the internet's just a phase. Go back to the drawing board and think about the publication. Interestingly, they're now down to one publication.
I'm not surprised.
And what actually I never ever envisaged was that Event Industry News has just organically grown over the years, you know, by being very well integrated with the search engines and being very, very organically search engine optimized and being a news source and things like that. We now have 90,000 industry professionals following us on LinkedIn. We have over 50,000 on Twitter. We have our own opt-in subscription databases. I think total across the globe of where we deliver news to is north of 170,000 professionals. And that to me shows that really the growth of our publication is unlimited, in the sense of people who want to stay interested in the industry, people who are researching the industry, people who are coming new into the industry. We are a source of information and news for them to help them on their path, their businesses and their careers and things like that. And I think the evolution that I see of our business is just to provide more value, but maybe in slightly different mediums. You know, we've produced our own podcast with over 100,000 listeners since we launched it. We do other things like video mediums and things like that, video interviews and things like that. So it's just providing ways of companies finding the right way for them to position themselves with the media, right, in order for us to provide value to them. One of the things that is actually working extremely well for us at the moment, both in terms of for sponsors and for the industry, is we've only just started doing our own industry data-led reports, and they've become very, very, there's a lot of appetite out there for industry reports. So if you've got a means in ways to collect that information and survey your audience and then editorially package that up into, you know, a document that can be of high value, then that's a really high value ticket item for a potential sponsor or exhibitor.
Right, right. Where do you see this heading in form and in in context? Do you see this retaining the kind of structure that you have today, or do you see it sort of getting more, because your newsletter is reaching 170,000 people, you said, right? Mm-hmm. So do you see that more stress from your end will be in actually growing that side of it, because then you are actually in the inbox and not waiting for them to come to the website to look at the news? I mean, where do you see this headed?
I think my honest answer to that is I've never honestly worried too much about the growth. I think I've been a believer in that if you are compassionate and consistent and creative for an industry in the way that you provide news and information and content to them, then people will follow you. I think we live in this really strange world of everybody overvalues and analyzes top line audience sizes and figures and numbers. Now, I arguably gave them to you earlier to give you and your readers, a listener, audience, a scope of how many people we do reach. But I don't necessarily think that that's the only value that we bring, is just the amount of people that we reach in terms of eyeballs. I think we do lots of other things that provide value. And I think the value that I quantify and look at, or the business metric that I look at into whether we are a healthy, established and growing business, is retention. Is retention. It's how much of our audience are we retaining? How much of our customer base are we retaining? Because that for me is the most important metric. If you are retaining and retaining, then growth comes organically from that, because new people will be attracted to that as well. I wouldn't be hung up too much on growth. I think there are interesting opportunities for individuals and creators out there in the industry to provide themselves with an income and revenue through leveraging platforms like TikTok and others, and being, you know, individuals who create content for an industry like the events industry and stuff like that. But the one thing I am a strong believer in, and maybe this is an old way of thinking it, is people still want a source, an authority, an unbiased center of news and information, like event industry news, to kind of look at, to glean from themselves, or to be featured in as well. So yeah, I don't know whether that answers your question.
It does. Maybe I didn't frame it appropriately, so I will still frame it and dig a little more.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
So my thought was more about whether newsletters will become the future, because you're reaching people who have opted into listen. It's sort of like coming to a trade show in a different way, that I've opted into your newsletter because I value what content you'll give me. And will that become a larger part of your outreach vis-a-vis your website? That was really my question.
Right. So if you were to give me $1 million today and say, Adam, you've got to choose one of your areas to grow, to reach audience, to grow that audience, newsletters would probably be the least of my concern on that.
Okay.
It's generally fairly hard to get people to subscribe to a newsletter in today's age without some value of exchange. You know, lots of businesses go around it by offering discounts or other things, incentives at this day. But for somebody to literally just subscribe to themselves is fairly challenging. It's the amount of effort it takes in order to drive that growth is almost not worth it. Mm-hmm. We've just done historically well because people have just subscribed over the last 10 years. I would focus newsletters in terms of the format of sending people information and content, yes, but I would actually look to leverage other technologies such as WhatsApp, such as LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is they're doing the distribution for you. They've got to get through the spam walls. They're doing the hosting. They're doing the they're paying for the infrastructure and all of this kind of stuff. And LinkedIn for us was an interesting one, because I was quite personally resistant to us launching a LinkedIn newsletter. I was like, we've already got our newsletters. We're just going to be diluting what we've already got. Is it worth it? Is it just another thing? And I'll be honest with you, I was proven wrong. Because in less than 12 months, we on our newsletter on LinkedIn, we went from zero to over 30,000 subscribers on LinkedIn. And that's just a once a week newsletter out there. So I think any business or individual who's got access to that feature on LinkedIn with the right content can build an extremely healthy, openly visual in terms of value, way to reach an audience. And the interesting thing that I can see from LinkedIn is, although there's no built-in advertising ecosystem or revenue generator for the content curator or anything like that, it doesn't actually stop you putting images in and linking them out to websites. So you could ultimately sell that opportunity to a sponsor and actually drive revenue through it and stuff like that. So I think newsletters are a fantastic way. You know, you've seen others like Eventbrew and others kind of blow up just doing newsletters and then sell for big bucks. So if you were looking as an event to get into the newsletter world, then having a newsletter brand, but a really strong editorially one could work really well.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some concepts which are interesting right now in that space, and we'll move on from this, like zero click, right? Yeah. So you don't really are sending people out, but you're really giving them the gist of what you're trying to say right there. So they get it right there and they're not moving around. To sort of bring this session to an end, Adam, where do you think? So it's sort of a repetition of what I asked at the beginning. I want to ask that again. Where do you see this headed? Which are the areas where you see the biggest growth coming from, whether it's geography or industry? Where do you see trade show growth, the trade show and event industry growth coming from?
Okay. The trade show and event, to me, the trade show and events industry, although trade show events are kind of like two separate things, like trade shows in itself are its own industry, its own event type. And then events collectively are, you know, is that a corporate external event, a corporate internal event, blah, blah, blah. So let's just talk about trade shows and exhibitions. I think the growth of trade shows and exhibitions will come through the ability for those organizations to be able to really intently analyze their information and data that they have from their audiences. And for technologies like using AI, like Bear Analytics and things, actually contextually and data-led identify opportunities for growth. Now that could be opportunities for existing events to grow, existing events to be geo-cloned, and have an event in a totally different location, like we've done with Eventech Live. We've got Eventech Live London and Eventech Live Las Vegas now. That creates opportunities to sell to new businesses, but also sell more to existing businesses as well, so more growth. Mm. And I think also identify opportunities to launch new event brands to existing communities, because you might have, you know, let's take a large business like Informa, who do thousands of events a year. It's not beyond the realm of thought that one individual might go to six different events that they produce, all in different industries. Mm-hmm. And is there something collectively that can bring all of those people together at a moment in time? So I think the growth of the events industry will be able to, for us to collect, interpret and deploy on that data in terms of opportunities of new events, growing existing events, and geocloning events as well. And also looking at other emerging sectors. Let's be honest about it. The events industry has been very good at creating straight out of the gate events for emerging sectors and industries and things like that.
And what would those be, a couple of them, top of your mind?
I think there's a huge amount of growth in cybersecurity. I think there's still a huge amount of growth in pharma and health and well-being. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately there will be an AI event for every sector and industry, in all honesty.
Yeah.
So a lot of those, and I think, you know, some emerging things. I'm gonna get a bit geeky with you now. I've just come across things like 3D printing, which, you know, wasn't a thing a decade ago, was it? It's now, and I think there's now an opportunity. Now I'm all of a sudden starting to look and explore on these. Can I go to these 3D printed events? Where do they exist? Are they consumer based events? Things like that. So I think as we create as society new technologies, then those will be where events are kind of generated and growth as well. And I think I'm going to give a shout out to one organization that's done a fantastic, fantastic job at this. There's a business called Raccoon Media and Events. Mike Seaman is the founder of that business. And they've generated a huge amount of growth and scope for their business by bringing people together under something that's existed for decades, which is things like running and snowboarding and things like that. And they've created these marketplaces. They're a marketplace trade show. Mm-hmm. So ultimately for some of their exhibitors, the ROI is immediate. They get to sell things to these individuals that are coming to these shows. And I'm a real big fan of those because I think they're fantastic businesses, you know, runners coming together, cyclists coming together, snowboarders coming together and things like that. And then they can take those events into different locations and things like that. And that's actually now, like I said, helping them expand into health and wellbeing and stuff like that. So they're kind of going down that route as well. I think they're fantastic events of communities of people coming together.
Yeah, exactly. I was just about to say that they're basically driving the community portion and then converting that into an event. Yeah.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit TradeshowEngage.com. That is TradeshowEngage.com.
Great. Adam, before I let you go, you have spent a lot of time with me right now. I'll not be greedy, but anything that you think you'd like to touch upon, which I have not been able to bring out?
I think there's lots of other things that we could talk about. I think one of the other things that we... myself are passionate about or thinks a very, very important topic within the industry. And to be fair, it's probably a whole nother podcast is that sustainability side of the events industry.
Yes.
I think we have a huge duty of care to try and evolve and do things differently, but also we've also got to be compassionate about the time and investment that takes as an industry. You know, these things aren't going to be solved overnight and things like that. I think we could probably talk about that maybe
absolutely. And I think it's extremely critical to talk about because you do feel when an event gets over, especially the large one, you see the amount of material that is literally destroyed. One of the discussion we were having is that it is really a choice between building a very huge booth in multiple locations or shipping it from one place to another, how practical that is, what is the cost, logistics, is that carbon footprint better than building it? I completely agree. I think it's a very important topic and I completely agree. I think this would be something I would love to chat. And you know so much because you are running a show on that. You have a deep understanding. I'm sure you're thinking about this for a long time. I will come back to you to talk about this. I'll come back to you to talk more about technology. But I think we have done a decent coverage of all that you are passionate about and looking at to start this conversation.
No, thank you very much for having me. And to any of the listeners, if you've got any questions or would like to chat to me individually, you can find me on LinkedIn. Shoot me a LinkedIn request and I'd be happy to help if I can.
Adam, thank you so much.
No, thank you very much for having me.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics and strategies to leverage the first party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for Pitchlink, the next generation visitor engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.